For years and years, heating has meant boilers, and boilers have meant breakdowns. Over here and over here. Anything but music to your ears. At Fisher Future Heat, we create state-of-the-art home heating systems that we fit, then you forget. With no annual servicing needed and a huge 10-year guarantee. In short, we engineer common sense. Search Fisher Future Heat today. Fisher Future Heat. The future is electric.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm Matt Hansen.
And you're listening to the Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is the Nerd Party, and thank you so much for downloading our episode or streaming it or however you're doing it. Just thank you for listening and taking the time. We want to thank you. Our numbers are growing steadily. We're getting more and more listeners. We're getting more and more reviews. And so we just want to thank you all who gave us a 5-star review, and also everyone who is talking about us on Twitter or on Facebook or liking us on Facebook. We thank you dearly. And if this is your first time listening, if you like the show, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, and we'll give you a shout-out on the podcast. And you can go to thenerdparty.com for any of your Nerd Party listening needs. But before we get into the topic of the show, Matt, this was a request of yours, right?
Right. And with all that said, I just want to welcome listeners to our first episode of 2015.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right.
So welcome. It's going to be an interesting year, which we will talk about later in the show during the main topic. But yes, Tristan, I was on Twitter earlier this week, and you were having... I'm usually the one who goes on Nerd Wars. Like, I'm firmly in the member of the pro, you know, JJ Star Trek, so I'm usually in that war. Mm-hmm. I'm a Marvel fan, so I'm usually in that war. But so usually I'm the one doing the nerd rage, but this week you went off on one, and you specifically requested that you get to talk about it on the show. So the floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much for reminding me. And yes, I did go kind of on a rant previously. And for those of you who are listening and follow me on Twitter, you probably heard it. But there seems to be a lot of confusion in when it comes to James Bond. Now, with the information of Spectre being released recently, a lot of news have come up, a lot of speculation. And like whenever that happens, people investigate stuff online and ask producers and writers and try to get as many details as they can. Obviously, we all know that Daniel Craig is playing James Bond once again, but his contract is over, you know, once Spectre is done. Now, that doesn't mean he's gone. It just means his contract is over. They might renew it. He might walk away from it. We don't know. And so,
is it over when Spectre's done? I thought it was over after the movie after Spectre.
I thought I read somewhere that it was Spectre. I'm pretty sure.
He's coming toward the end. That's the point.
He's coming towards the end. And so for some reason, people are absolutely fixated on Idris Elba being Bond. And like being the next Bond. He's the appropriate age, because most Bonds are, you know, started around their late 30s or early 40s. And I think Idris Elba's 42. And how it all started was like one interviewer asked Idris Elba if he would be interested in playing Bond. And he's like, yeah, sure. And it was just this off comment. And then all of these news websites said like, ooh, Idris Elba is going to be the next Bond? Question mark. You know, like, and for some reason it just exploded. And then all these nerds started arguing. And then, like, with this Spectre release, everybody started going back to Idris Elba. And then there was this Sony hack where, like, somebody made a passing comment about it in a Sony email. And so because somebody made a passing comment about it in a Sony email, then it was confirmed that Idris Elba is going to be the next James Bond and everything like that. And all of that exposition comes to this point, is that there is a theory, and it's wrong, by the way, that the name James Bond is not a real name, that it's a code name that people take up when they become 007. So like the name James Bond comes with the designation 007, and that's why we have Sean Connery play James Bond, and Roger Moore, and Timothy Dalton, George Lazenby, and Pierce Brosnan, and everything like that.
So what you're saying is it's a massive way for fans to try to establish this huge continuity over the last 50 years.
Yes, it is. It is just so fans can rectify it in their own brains and not just tell themselves it's a movie series. And so the entire reason how this spawned is because George Lazenby in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, who George Lazenby is the first Bond after Sean Connery in this timeline. And he did this cheeky moment of breaking the fourth wall at the end of the opening teaser where he looks dead at the camera and says, they never would have done this to the other fellow.
Yeah, very Roger Moore-esque.
Very Roger Moore-esque. And so everybody's like, oh, well, this means that you know, like, James Bond isn't a real name and that he's not really James Bond and there's no such thing as James Bond. And that is the one moment where it spawned decades and decades of misinformation. And they tried to correct it with Roger Moore and with Timothy Dalton because at the end of On Her Majesty's Secret Service, George Lazenby's James Bond marries a woman, Tracy, and then that Tracy gets gunned down and she dies. Mm-hmm. And that's the end of the movie. It's really sad. And then in Roger Moore, in multiple Roger Moore movies, and I think in one Timothy Dalton movie, they reference Tracy.
Yes.
They reference his wife dying. And so this proves it right there that this is a continued character. James Bond is one single James Bond.
I mean, you jumped all the way to Roger Moore and Timothy Dalton. It's disproved the very next movie. I mean, I know Diamonds Are Forever is a movie that a lot of Bond fans would rather forget, but it opens with Sean Connery trying to find Blofeld for revenge.
That's right, yes. I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I felt like it would be easier to jump to these different Bonds as opposed to Sean Connery because he was the first one. I mean, yes, okay, I'm all aware of the black and white Casino Royale, okay, but Sean Connery will always be the first Bond in my mind. But yeah, so like this has been disproved multiple times, and it's just from either casual fans or lazy hardcore fans, and this is the reason why it has spawned. And so many people have said, like, well, you know, like they say that it's also disproved in Skyfall because we see the home that he was born in. And it's, you know, it has the name Bond. We find out his parents' name and everything like that. But then people say, like, oh, this is a new continuity. So, you know, it's not really happening. Like, so that means that the old Bonds could still be a code name. But it's not. It's not. It's one character, one history. And then now we have a second history with Daniel Craig. So what that means is that they could continue with anybody they wanted to if they followed the same tradition as the older ones. So if a new Bond comes in, and I don't care if he's black, I don't care if he's Hispanic, all I care about is if he's British. That's like, they could bring in any single person they wanted and it would still be James Bond. That was my rant, and whoever who argues with me is wrong. This is the truth. This is how it is. All you have to do is watch a James Bond movie and you'll see.
Yeah, I think people get hung up on the winking moments in some of the movies because a James Bond movie every now and then will break the fourth wall, whether it's, you know, Lazenby talking directly to camera or whether it has, you know, like in Skyfall, I'm sure a lot of people got hung up on was that he has the Goldfinger car. But in those situations, and especially Skyfall, that was an anniversary movie. You're allowed to break the fourth wall in those kinds of movies.
And also, people like to bring up Judi Dench. Well, like, well, if it's a different continuity and if it's not just a code name, then why do we still have Judi Dench as M? The director of Casino Royale was asked this very question right when it happened. He said, like, the interviewers asked him, so this is a new continuity, right? He's like, yep, we're starting fresh. He's like, why do we have Judi Dench? And he goes, well, Judi Dench is awesome. Why wouldn't I keep her as M? And that's the answer.
That's the correct answer, by the way.
Exactly.
I mean, if you have Judi Dench, who, you know, even through the worst of the Brosnan films was a high water mark. I mean, how do you not keep her? And, you know, spoiler alert, they gave her the greatest exit in Skyfall. So she did well in this new continuity.
Absolutely. Yeah, she was used fantastically in the new continuity. And like you said, even some of the worst Brosnan movies had some of the best M moments. And also, I mean, there was also a wink in Tomorrow Never Dies when he punches a guy out who's smoking and he says, filthy habit. And that was a nod to the fact that James Bond doesn't smoke anymore. Like, Pierce Brosnan was the first one that didn't smoke.
We could do this all day. I mean, in Die Another Day, he's going through the lab with Q. He finds the jetpack from Thunderball and he says, does this still work? And it, of course, it shoots off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, see, it's... It just because those moments happen doesn't mean that we're in some sort of weird alternate universe or shared continuity. And like Matt, you came up with a reason that like it's so ingrained in us recently.
Yeah, because you know people are trying to make everything a shared universe at this point, right? Because I know that this has been a running theory for years, but I would like to believe it's come to the forefront because of the Marvel Renaissance and because that cinematic universe, which had never really been done before, has taken off so well. Now everybody wants to create a shared universe for everything, and whether it's meant to or not. And I think that sort of mentality is kind of spilling over into this Bond universe, if you will. And now everybody wants everything to be connected.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and I think that's really astute, because people are even trying to do it with the Pixar universe and saying that everything is in the same universe and here's proof why, and like, because you see Nemo in here and you see, you know, like you see Sully and Brave and everything like that, and they can't just tell themselves that it's just because it's made by the same company and they love doing Easter eggs. That's it. That's the answer.
Right. But you know, look at what the next 10 years hold for movie franchises. I mean, everybody now is doing a cinematic universe. Marvel's still doing their thing, but they did it first. But now, you know, Sony wants to do one, and now Universal wants a shared monsters universe, and Fox is trying to set up one with X-Men and Fantastic Four, and Disney again is doing it with Star Wars, and I'm sure if Paramount wanted to, they could do it with Star Trek. So, like, you know, everybody wants to do a shared universe at this point.
Yeah. I don't know if I could say that Marvel did it first, but they definitely did it the most successfully. And they did it the biggest.
It's certainly the one that... You're right. They didn't do it first because the Universal Monsters kind of did it way back in the day. But it's the one that the most recent pop culture example of, like, a huge success story. I mean...
Oh, definitely. And the most successful. Absolutely. Bar none. All right. Well, we did about 12 minutes on my James Bond rant.
Do you feel better?
I do feel better, and I'm glad that our listeners were able to listen to my rant. And we don't like to rant that much on the show. We like to keep it positive. And so let's go right into the theme of our show, or at least the overall topic of our show. Since this is the first show of 2015, let's do a retrospective on the best movies of 2014. And so, Matt, you and I are going to give our top five.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I have to say, now, I avoided a lot of the crap, although, like, we do have some of the worst things we've ever seen last year. But 2014 for me was a great year for films, especially the films that I was, like, every film that I was looking most forward to turned out to be excellent. So, you know, that's a good high watermark for that year, if I do say so myself. But Tristan, would you like to start with your number five?
Sure, yeah, I'll go with number five. So my number five is Guardians of the Galaxy.
That is also my number five.
Hey, all right. Okay, so now we can just go straight into it and talk about it. Now, Guardians of the Galaxy, I also want to state this out loud that before we get too deep into it, I very rarely go to the theater anymore. It takes a lot to get me to the theater, and so I'm always 6 months behind everybody else who goes to the theater, and so there's a lot of great movies of 2014 that I have not seen
yet. Yeah, I mean, it's true, folks. He's been grumbling at me behind the scenes because I've been insisting we do weekend of release reviews for next year.
And so it means I'm going to have to whip out the pocketbook and start going to see movies because I just can't stand people. Like, I don't like people whatsoever in large quantities. And so I cannot stand sitting in a theater with people talking and reeking of smoke or old people just screaming at the screen going, "Oh my God, they were from Harry Potter." You know, like, I can't stand that stuff.
Oh, that's your old people. My old people is usually like, "What did he say?"
Yeah. Or younger people literally taking selfies while the movie is going on with the flash on. Yes, that has happened. And I can't stand it. My blood pressure just goes through the roof. So anyway, that's one of the reasons why I'm so behind. But Guardians of the Galaxy, I mean, you saw this well before me. You saw this in the theater, and then I didn't...
I saw this in the theater. Fun story. I was in Star Trek Las Vegas. I was in Las Vegas. It was the weekend of the convention that this came out in August. And so the convention, it was the last day I was there, the convention was over, and there was a movie theater across from my hotel, so I actually went to go see this in Vegas while I was on vacation.
Very cool, very cool. Yeah, it's, this one, like you told me, you said, you're like, don't expect anything dramatic, you know, like, don't expect anything that, you know, like, will blow your hair back, but expect to have a fun ride, and that's exactly what I had, and I really appreciate this movie, because they advertised this movie very well. You knew what you were getting into, and you knew what it was going to be and what it wasn't going to be, and they delivered. And I think that's why this is the top grossing film of 2014, is because it's just fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously, has great one-liners, great performances, and sure, it has some eye-rolling moments, but name a Marvel movie or a sci-fi movie that doesn't. And I just think this is definitely one of the most fun movies of 2014, and that's why it's my top five.
Yeah, you mentioned eye-rolling moments. I feel like this is one of those movies that owned its eye-rolling moments, though. Like it knows that, yeah, that was a lame joke, but we're gonna have fun with it anyway. You know what I mean? Like, and mm-hmm. I think what I wrote down about this film, because I wanted to gather my thoughts and not sound like an idiot on air, is that what it lacks in story originality, because it's used for your generic superhero story, sci-fi adventure, but what it lacks for in originality, it makes up for in its really, really stellar casting, in my opinion. The main cast of the Guardians is so strong, and mm-hmm. and I think that's personified greatly in the leading man, Chris Pratt, who I had not seen before this year. I know he's on Parks and Rec. I don't watch the show. I heard him in the Lego Movie earlier this year, mm-hmm. but I had never seen him. And it's hard to deny when you see his performance in this movie that he is a leading man, he is a star, and it's no wonder that they cast him in Jurassic World next year.
It's so weird because like, he was not their first choice, but I'm sure that they're glad that they got him. One of their choices, and they actually offered the role, was to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and he turned it down so he could be in the Sin City sequel. And I can't even imagine how much he's kicking himself, but at the same time, I can't even picture Joseph Gordon-Levitt in a single frame of this movie.
No. He can be a fun guy if he wants to be. I mean, he started off with Third Rock from the Sun, so I know he's got comedy in him.
Oh yeah.
But you can't see anybody in this role but Chris Pratt. It has to be him.
Yeah, he owned it and he made it his own. So I think this is a very good number five. Well, since I went first, how about,
I just wanted to say, P.S. to any movie studio, if you're looking to launch a superhero or sci-fi franchise, find somebody named Chris to be your lead. That seems to be how it works these days.
It's happening a lot. All right, well, I gave I was the first one to go, and it turned out to be a tie on our number five. So how about you give us your number four?
My number four is a movie that we've talked about on this show before, and hopefully we'll be talking about in the near future, and that is X-Men Days of Future Past.
That's my number four as well.
Really?
Yeah.
So I don't think our number threes will be the same because it's more of a recent film. So if you don't worry, listeners, it's going to have some variety. But X-Men, this last one, Days of Future Past, this is the movie I've wanted since 2006. Not only do we get to right the wrongs of The Last Stand, which if we're listing biggest disappointments of 2006, that would be number one for me. but it also found a way to, incorporate the previous cast with this new first class cast that makes a movie that highlights what we like about both. And I was a bigger fan of First Class than you were, but I think that they use both sets of cast members exactly how they should be used, and it let both of them shine in a way that, quite frankly, an X-Men film hasn't done in a long time, and it's given me a lot of hope for the franchise, and I can't wait for Apocalypse in 2016.
Yeah, I was surprised at how much I like this film. I mean, when I saw the trailer, I knew this was going to be good, but trailers have fooled me very hard in the past, and once we get to my biggest disappointment of the year, that'll be a one-way that it surprised me. But yeah, it's just, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you are right. I mean, you liked First Class a whole lot more than I did. I liked it more the second time I watched it, but it still doesn't mean I thoroughly enjoyed it. But Days of Future Past, it used both sets of people fantastically. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of the original cast in it, but I'm hoping that we get some more in Apocalypse. But I mean, I feel like they've had their shot. They had their trilogy. And now it's this, and now it's kind of this this First Class era's time, and it's just
my question to you being is that since you didn't like First Class initially as much and you liked it more the second time around, did this movie Days of Future Past do a better job of getting you to like the First Class crew more this time out?
Well, it wasn't so much the crew that I didn't like, because I liked the casting. I loved Fassbender and McAvoy. I think they were fantastic choices for those characters. I thought Jennifer Lawrence was great. I loved the casting, and I even thought Kevin Bacon made a pretty good bad guy. And that scene, I think it's South America, I can't quite remember, when he's getting the beer, he's in the bar,
yeah.
And he uses the knife against those former Nazis. Oh my gosh, that is a fantastic scene. And the hair flip right before he takes out the knife, you know. And it's just, there's a lot of great moments in First Class, but I hated the direction. And so I'm really glad that we had a different director with Days of Future Past, because I did not like that director. I felt like it was very schizophrenic at times. And we've talked about it before, but I felt like Days of Future Past had a vision. And even though it had two timelines going back and forth, it felt very cohesive and like it was both streaming in one direction. And so I got to applaud them for wrapping everything up from day one and putting it on the right path. I mean, that's a monumental feat.
And I got to say, we'll talk about this more when we talk about Days of Future Past in depth, which will happen. But one of my, you know, fist pump at the screen moments this summer was seeing when, spoiler alert, Wolverine wakes back up and the timeline has corrected himself. And you see, you know, everybody there, including Scott Summers and Jean Grey.
Yes, yes. It's nice to see those two back again and having the same relationship. And if you notice, like, the technology was a little bit more advanced.
Mm-hmm.
Like I thought that was pretty interesting, interesting way to do it. And also at the same time, I felt a little harsh. I was like, oh, he just he has no memory of the timeline he's in now. So he just now has to start fresh.
Which one?
Well, Wolverine, once he wakes up in that timeline, the past 30 years or 40 years are gone.
Oh, see, here's the thing. I didn't think the past 30 or 40 years were gone. I thought I thought because the way that it's explained in the movie is that he would remember the old timeline, and he would.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what happened in this new universe that he just created, but he remembers Jean dying and him having to kill her, mm-hmm. and everybody else dying. And basically it just corrected everything that was wrong with The Last Stand in one fell swoop.
Yeah, but now he's in a new timeline. That's his timeline now. That's the only timeline, and he has no memory of it. That kind of makes me sad. But anyway, like you said, we'll talk about that in depth once we move on. So now, okay, since we both tied on 5 and 4, I guess it's my turn with number 3, and my number 3 is Interstellar.
Okay.
Okay, so that's not your number 3.
No, that's
fantastic.
Not my number 3. Like I said, it's more of a recent one that I'm pretty sure you haven't seen yet.
Okay, well, Interstellar, I mean, we did an entire podcast just on Interstellar, and I felt like, you know, after we walked away, I was like, you know, were we too negative on it? We were too hard on it. And a friend of mine on Twitter, a follower of mine on Twitter, he just recently got into the Nerd Party, and he's now a subscriber. Oh, and please, everybody subscribe, by the way. And he listened to the Interstellar one, and I asked him, I was like, were we too hard on it? And he's like, no, you showed some love. And I always felt like I needed to show more love, because this was a great movie. This was a solid movie. It's number 3 on my list. It's just they hyped it up too much. I mean, this was supposed to be like the number 1 movie for the next 10 years. That's how much they hyped it up. And that's not, it's number 3 on my list of 2014. So you know, like, if you want to hear us go in depth about it, please listen to that episode. It's called Fifth Dimensional Beings, and it's we go very much in depth. But it's just solid cinematography, great performances from everyone, great casting, and great special effects. And it's just lacking in sound design, but it's I think this is because it's so pro science and such an original story. I feel like this deserves to be number 3 on my list.
See, I was wondering if the you were mentioning earlier how trailers had not lived up to your expectations, and you would be talking about them later in some of your picks. I was wondering if this was going to come up under that category, because I remember you being like, as were a lot of people on Twitter, but I remember you being just so super excited when that first teaser trailer came out. Was it like back in last year?
Yeah,
like
last
the beginning
year, yeah.
Beginning of last year. So, but I'm glad that you liked it. I mean, I still have my problems with it, but it was a well-made, well-executed film. Beautiful to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing, is that I want people to know that I do love this film. I do enjoy this film. It could have been better, but a lot of movies could be that way. And so I think just the sheer mechanics of how this movie was made and when it got made and the message that it had is enough to rise it up on the ranks above X-Men and Guardians of the Galaxy. So what is your number three?
My number three is a movie that just came out where I was a couple weeks back, and it's not one that I thought would be high up on this list. I thought I would like it, but not number three, and that's The Imitation Game.
Oh, I can't wait to see this. I want to see this so bad.
And I got to tell you, Tristan, I was already a Benedict Cumberbatch fan from Sherlock and his voice in The Hobbit. And yes, Star Trek fans, I liked Into Darkness. Come kill me. My address is 486. No, I'm not going to give you
that. No, we're not doing that.
But I did not expect to be as blown away as I was in this film. And, you know, it taught me a lot because I had heard of Alan Turing, but I never knew just how vital he was to not only winning the war, but also to every piece of modern technology that we have today, iPhones, mm-hmm. computers, stereo systems, they all stem back to this machine that he created back in the 1940s to break this Nazi code. And you get to see that process in this film. And what I also really appreciated about it is that for those of you who don't know, Alan Turing was a homosexual, and they touch upon this in the film quite well, actually, to where it's not overpowering the main story of breaking the Nazi code, but they play it in a way where it's in the background. And mm-hmm. by the end of it, that it comes to a climax where you really, really feel for this character, because also, if you don't know, I mean, the man was convicted and sentenced because it was a crime back in those days in Great Britain. Chemically castrated, and then later he committed suicide.
Yeah, and it's hard to really say spoiler alert on this because this, you know, this is a true story that's been around for a very long time.
I know, but see, I had never known any of this, so I say spoiler alert knowing, because what's really fascinating, and they touch upon this toward the end, where this information of what he did for the Allies during the war was sealed for 50 years. Mm-hmm. And it didn't see the light of day until very recently, if you think about it. And it's just a fascinating story. Cumberbatch is fantastic. Keira Knightley, who is very hit or miss for me, is excellent in this film.
Oh, that's good. Really, that's good to hear, because I feel the same way about Keira Knightley.
But she's fantastic in this film, and you really feel the bond of friendship between her and Turing. And go see this film, Tristan. I know you don't like going to the theaters, but do yourself a favor and go see this one, because I think it's one that stands out for sure.
I was when I got back from Christmas vacation and back to work, and people were talking about this movie, and one guy who enjoyed the movie said that he didn't enjoy it as much because he thought it was going to be, like, he knew nothing about Turing, and he thought it was going to be a much more of a World War II thriller, mm-hmm. and it was much more of a, it was much more introspective and much more about his life. Like, he did not know it was going to be that much about his life.
Yeah, well then I'll just say up front, if that's what you got, if anyone's listening to this and that's what you're expecting, reset expectations. It takes place during World War II. It's a period piece, but it's a character study.
There you go. Yes, I think people should know that before they go in. It's a character study. It is not a thriller. It's not a spy thriller. It's, you know, like, it's nothing like that. I mean, I have not seen it yet, but from what I've heard, you need to reset your expectations because it's a fantastic film. I can't wait to see it. And I'm a big Turing fan. Like, I'm a big tech nerd. And so I've known about his accomplishments for a while, and I've researched him and everything like that. And it's absolutely horrific what the government did to him. And I'm glad that this is put in cinematic form, because some people would never know about him unless they went and saw a movie about him instead of just reading about him. So yes, I think I just can't wait to see it. Okay, so now it's back on to me for number two, and this is a movie that you and I have reviewed a great deal and actually spent, I think, our first two episodes on it, or like more so one than the other, but my number two is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
I absolutely love this movie. I saw it in the theater, and I picked it up immediately when it came out on video and watched it a couple times since then, and it completely holds up. This is a very well casted movie. This is very well structured. Andy Serkis, I think this is his absolute best performance ever, and I mean that ever, even with Lord of the Rings in the mix and with everything else that he's done, whether it's been motion captured or it's just been him in person. This is his best performance, because he gets to take Caesar on a different level. I mean, he knocked it out of the park with Rise, and he hit another home run in Dawn, and I cannot wait to see what he's going to do in the third one. And I think this is a very underrated franchise, and Thankfully, it's one of the top grossing films of 2014, and it's getting the respect that it deserves, and it's revitalizing an old franchise that Burton kind of, you know, peed on a little. And so I'm so excited. I was so excited to see it because Rise was so fantastic and so underrated and such a surprise that I was so glad that I was a little worried because it's a new director. And I was really hoping that it would be just as good, and it was, if not better. And this was hard to put as number two on my list.
Interesting choice. Now I'm going to tell you something that's kind of mind blowing for my number two, because I'm pretty sure from the way I talked about it on Twitter this whole year, and on all social media, everyone expected it to be my number one. But my number two movie for the year is Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
What? Number two?
Yes, number two. And like I said, it'll surprise you when I get to number one. But how could this not end up on my list somewhere? You know what I mean? Like, this was a movie that, A, I was really anticipating because I saw the trailers last year and it looked excellent. And B, you know, in my opinion, that Chris Evans is the hottest person to ever put on a superhero suit. But
I don't know if I can argue with that one. Even being a straight guy, I don't know if I can argue with that.
But, you know, when this came out, I did not expect it to be as good as it was, so much so that I did count, and I saw it seven times in the theater. Seven times.
Yeah, seven times. See, that's the thing. Is like, you saw it seven times in the theater, and and it's number two on your... Oh, Henry Cavill. That would be my answer about hottest guy in a superhero suit. Anyway, moving on.
Anyway, but... As crazy as that sounds, this movie surprised me in a number of ways, because I was not one of those people that hated the Marvel films that came out in 2013, that being Iron Man 3 and Thor: The Dark World. But I did feel that, you know, I was getting a little concerned that maybe they were going to save the universe-altering movies just for Avengers, and we would have these little side adventures in between. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'm all right with that. I wish it would be a little bit more substantial. This one altered the universe in a way that they can't really come back from, and I think is going to really affect what happens in Age of Ultron this year. But very interesting, darker for a Marvel movie, but still has that Marvel sense of fun about it. Mm-hmm. I think Chris Evans and Scarlett Johansson really work well together on screen, being that they've been in so many movies before and they just know each other, and you could see that come through.
It worked.
Robert Redford, I never thought I would see him in a Marvel movie, but that just shows you the power of Marvel at this point, that they're attracting actors like Robert Redford. And, you know, they're even talking about Al Pacino at this point for something. Jeez. And
everybody wants a piece of the pie, man. When the tit's that big, everybody lines up. It's so, yeah, everybody wants a part of it.
So, you know, it's incredible. And he was a great foil. And what was so interesting about his casting was that it harkened back to the movies that he made back in the 70s, because what I really liked about this film, and I think it works well for Captain America, is that it was a political spy thriller. Mm-hmm. And that's something that the Marvel Universe hadn't touched yet, and it did so well. I love conspiracy movies. That's why I think, you know, if I think to other sci-fi franchises, that's why Star Trek VI is my favorite of the original series, because I love conspiracy plots. I love Manchurian Candidate, that sort of thing. And this works so well. And I was already a Captain America fan just from the casting, and I really liked the character as well. But what I liked about this film is that I think it made the world love Captain America, and it made him more than just a square. It brought him out of that Superman mold and made him a real flesh and blood character that people can root for. And I really, really like that. And Chris Evans is the perfect choice, aside from being hot, but he's perfect.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think you're right that Captain America 2 made the world love Captain America, because I hated the first one. I absolutely hated it. I fell asleep, and I even tried it again, and I could barely stay awake. But Captain America 2 is like a completely different franchise in my mind. And I was so happy, because some of my favorite moments in Avengers was the Captain America moments. And so I was really surprised that... the first one did so, like, was so poor, and then Captain America 2 was just so grandiose and so big that I immediately knew. I was like, they're going to feature him heavily in Age of Ultron, and you were going to see him front and center with Iron Man in all the promotional materials. And what happened? That's that's what you see.
I certainly hope so. I really hope so, and I don't think that they're going to let us down with that. But definitely looking forward to seeing more Cap in the future.
All right, so we're on to number one. I guess it's my turn for number one. And this one might surprise you, maybe not, because I was a little critical of it the first time I saw it, and you and I have talked about it, but my number one, absolutely 100%, is Gone Girl.
That's my honorable mention.
That's your honorable mention? Okay, Gone Girl, when I first saw it, and some of the greatest movies that I've seen, or some of the best movies that I've loved, I don't necessarily am in love with them right away. I mean, a lot of people have kind of made fun of me for that. They're like, I'll complain about the movie with them, and then 6 months later, all I can talk about is how much I love it. And they're like, what, is it your favorite movie now? I was like, yeah, probably. And Gone Girl is, okay, so they released it early on digital, and they really, I think, released it a full month before it comes out on Blu-ray. It comes out on Blu-ray on the 13th of January, and I just couldn't wait, and my wife couldn't wait either. And so because of that, we ordered it on digital, and we've watched it 3 times since then, and then we're going to buy it on Blu-ray because we got to have it. And plus, you know, like, I'm a huge, huge Fincher fan, and so is my wife. We, like, I could tell you that we go and have Fincher marathons, but pretty much every other day is a Fincher marathon.
You two have Fincher marathons the way that, like, we have Marvel marathons or Star Trek marathons.
Yes, I mean, very much so.
You guys are totally into it. And I got to say, I heard that this film was good when it was about ready to come out, and I heard that it had, like, twists and turns. But I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did. And as much as I think Ben Affleck owned the role and was perfect in that film, I think the star of the show really is Rosamund Pike.
Oh, I think the world agrees with you. I mean, her career is going to be completely different now. I mean, already she is noticing the effects. I mean, the paparazzi numbers have just skyrocketed to, like people are following her around. Her number of photo shoots went from maybe 5 a year to 5 a week. And
like I said during our show when we talked about it, I can't, you know, no longer is she just Miranda Frost from Die Another Day to me. She's actually like a real full-blown actress.
Yeah, she is full-blown in the spotlight, and she deserves it because that performance was amazing, and that performance made the movie. And Fincher is an auteur. He is fantastic, and he's already a legend in the industry, and he's just, I mean, every single one of his films has gotten above 80% in Rotten Tomatoes, every single film he's ever made.
Well, except for Alien 3, of course.
Yes, you're right, you're right. Begrudgingly, I say you were right, because that got a 44% on Rotten Tomatoes. That was his first film. I give some leeway on that one. His first film, a lot of studio inner.
Yeah, not really his film.
But, okay, so after Aliens 3, all of his movies have stayed 80% or above. So it's just the editing of this film, the music, the performances, the casting, every single thing was spot on. And the guy gives some of the best commentaries in the business. You have to listen to his commentaries.
Does he really? Like, I've not heard a David Fincher commentary before, but I might. Gone Girl may not be my favorite. I think it's number two in his filmography for me. I think nothing he's directed has beaten Seven, but that's just because Seven's my kind of movie.
Well, we definitely need to do a Fincher retrospective episode, because Gone Girl wouldn't be my number one out of Fincher. But it's definitely up there.
Well, if we're going to move over to my number one, Tristan, I had to really bite my tongue, because my number one is a movie that, quite frankly, I did not expect would be in my top five list, let alone my favorite movie of the year, and that's Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. It really turned out to be my favorite movie of the year, and I'm going to tell you something. I saw Rise back when it came out in 2011. And I had not seen any of the Planet of the Apes films before. I just heard that this one was getting good buzz. It was kind of a reboot. So, I went with my family and saw it and really ended up enjoying it, but not getting immersed too much in it because I didn't know the history of the franchise at that point. But I got to tell you, as Dawn was coming out, I went back and made a conscious effort and watched all the films, including Burton's piece of crap remake. But I watched all of them again. And I came to realize what an amazing franchise it was. And Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is probably my favorite one. It blew me away. Everything you said about Andy Serkis was true. I give a lot of credit to Toby Kebbell in that film, who played Koba. I think he was fantastic. He wasn't Koba in Rise, but he was Koba in Dawn. And he created an antagonist that I certainly won't forget for a long time. And really, it's made me a fan of this franchise. I mean, look at this. This is what I got for Christmas this year because I asked for them.
All right, this is bad podcasting right now, but he's holding up a whole bunch of Blu-rays up to the camera right now. It looks like Rise of the Planet of the Apes on Blu-ray, as well as the entire collection of Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, the first five movies on Blu-ray and Rise. I mean, these wouldn't be in my house now if I hadn't been watching Dawn. And, of course, I bought Dawn the first day it came out on Blu-ray. Unequivocally, as much as I saw Captain America in the theaters, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is by far my favorite movie of the year and my favorite movie of the summer.
It was hard for me not to put this as number one. And if Gone Girl had not come out, it would have been my number one. This is a fantastic film. And we did an entire podcast on it. I think it was our first or second podcast.
Our first one was the Dawn review.
It was the Dawn review. So please, if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it. And please watch the movie if you have not seen it, because it is phenomenal. All right. Well, before we get into the movies that we are looking forward to the most in 2015, let's talk about three movies of 2014 that are separate from our favorites. So first off, we'll give the worst movie we've seen in 2015, the biggest disappointment, and then the biggest surprise. So how about you go first with the worst movie you've seen of 2014?
It's topped a lot of people's lists. And quite frankly, if another podcast that I was listening to wasn't covering it, I wouldn't have gone to see it. Who would subject themselves to 3 hours of Transformers Age of Extinction?
Oh, geez. Why on earth did you go see this?
Because, like I said, a podcast that I really love and I've been listening to for years does movie retrospectives, and they were going to cover this one. So I went to go see it, so I knew what they were hating on. And I didn't like any of the first three ones either, so I don't know why I plunked down money to see this one. But it is 3 hours. It is a 3-hour Transformer movie.
And legitimately 3 hours, or is it like 2 hours?
No, it's like legitimately 3 hours. Like, if it's 2 hours, I think it's like 2 hours and 45 minutes. Which you can round up to three.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea it was that long.
With trailers and everything. Look it up on Wikipedia. I'm more than positive. If it's not 3 hours, it is approaching there and would get there with the trailers and previews in front of it. And if it's 2 hours and 45 minutes, then about 2.5 hours is nothing but action.
Okay. I just looked it up, and you were absolutely right. It is 2 hours and 45 minutes.
So, like I said, 2 hours and 2.5 hours of that is nothing but robots punching each other.
That in itself is should be a movie sin. Okay, that is a science fiction. Okay, I can't even call it a science fiction movie. I mean, I know that it is, but it is much more of an action film than it is a science fiction film. An action film should not be longer than 2 hours. That's just obscene.
It is, and especially if the dialogue is as cringeworthy, if the characters are as one-dimensional, if the product placement is just as bad. I think it's like, I'm usually not the one that begrudges product placement in a film, because I know it realistically it has to be there for films to get financed. But this was just egregious and in your face. I mean, and like I said, I've never wanted to leave a theater more than after the 3 hours that I sat there to watch this film.
Man, all right. Well, I wish I could pity you, but you brought it on to yourself.
Yeah, I know.
All right. So, well, my worst movie of 2014 that I've seen is a completely it is the opposite of what you saw. It is the antithesis of a Transformers movie.
Oh, here we go. Are we going to complain about Most Wanted Man again?
It is a Most Wanted Man. That movie got a 90-something percent on Rotten Tomatoes, a 90-something percent. And this is by far the worst movie of 2014 that I have seen, and it could be one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Now, you want to know something funny? My mom, who usually goes for these kind of films, watched it, got it through Netflix and watched it with my dad. She comes to me afterwards and she's like, that movie was weird.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like they marketed it completely wrong. They marketed it as a thriller. And that this was going to have so much intrigue and just, you know, like shadow dealings and just real, like a lot of politics and everything like that. And it was not that at all. It was boring. It was slow. Nothing happened. And spoiler alert, the end of the movie meant nothing. It erased everything that happened before it. It felt like a 3-hour movie, and it was not. It was only 2 hours, but it felt like 3 hours. And I cannot stress, like, this had a lot of great actors in it. And the trailer told me that this was going to be an amazing movie that just put you on the edge of your seat. I wanted to just leave the room and never come back. I was angry after I watched this film. Don't go see it.
Okay.
all right, whew, I feel better now, you know? Like, doesn't that feel nice? I feel like a huge weight is off of my shoulders.
Even I wasn't that upset at Transformers. It sucked, but I was not that raging.
No, I a total nerd rage at the end of it. Okay, so what was your biggest disappointment?
Well, see, I don't think I was too disappointed by many films this year. If I had to single one out, because I saw the superhero films this year, I had to put Amazing Spider-Man 2 as my biggest disappointment. Only because I'm one of those people that didn't hate the new reboot. In fact, I liked the cast better in this version than the original version. I think Andrew Garfield's a step up and Emma Stone's a big step up.
Oh yeah.
But I think the second one suffered mainly from what I was trying to explain to you earlier during our little Bond discussion, is that it suffered from universe setup. Like, this was a gateway. This was supposed to be a gateway film, and it just felt like, instead of being a complete film, it's supposed to be a setup for whatever shared Spider-Man universe that Sony wants to have. And I think the character development in it kind of suffered for it. And spoiler alert, Emma Stone is not going to be in these films anymore after this film. But I don't know where they go from here. Like I said, I didn't hate it like the world did, apparently. Yeah. But it was kind of a come down even from that first one, which wasn't universally loved.
Yeah, I mean, I like the first one more than the Tobey Maguire movies, and the second one, I was just very indifferent. I was just like, after watching it, I was just like, what are you guys doing? What on earth do you think you're doing? And now, like, you had an origin movie, and now you're having a setup movie. You have the gall to do a setup movie after an origin movie, and they didn't even do it well. And now they may not even make the third one.
Right. We'll see what happens. I mean, there's a lot of talk about, you know, Spider-Man might be in this Civil War movie that Marvel's doing. It might revert back to Marvel. Who the hell knows? But
yeah, heaven and earth would have to move in order for that to happen because of merchandising rights. But
well, first of all, I just want to nip that in the bud and say that if it happens, fine. If it doesn't, I'm fine with that because, quite frankly, the Spider-Man needs the Marvel Cinematic Universe more than the Marvel Cinematic Universe needs Spider-Man.
Very well put. All right. Well, my biggest disappointment, and you might laugh at me for this one, because I could easily put A Most Wanted Man as my biggest disappointment, but that I put that as the worst movie because I wasn't heavily invested in A Most Wanted Man. I just saw the trailer and I was like, oh, it looks like fun. My biggest disappointment is A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Yeah, we kind of touched on this before, I think.
Yes. I mean, I'm a big Seth MacFarlane fan. I mean, I'm not like, I wouldn't call myself a fanboy. Like, I'm not some sort of weird frat boy who sits in the dark and just screams Family Guy, you know, like anything like that.
I was gonna say, what does a Seth MacFarlane fanboy look like?
I think that's what it looks like. I think it's your stereotypical bro, you know, like it's if you want a stereotype,
right?
I mean, I was gonna say
I buy Family Guy on DVD and I buy American Dad sometimes, and I'm not like that. But
yeah, see, that's the thing. I was like, that's why I'm saying stereotypically, because I buy Family Guy DVDs, I buy American Dad DVDs, even though I have access to them on Netflix. I still buy them because I want them. And but like, just, you have the backwards hat guy with the pencil thin douchebag mustache and beard, and you also have like, they can't see through the haze of bong water. But
so you're saying Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused?
Pretty much, yeah. Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused. I think you hit the nail on the head. Because I was a big fan of Ted. Like, that was very surprising to me. I was like, wow, that was actually really well done and really funny. I guess this guy can direct. And then A Million Ways to Die in the West happened, and I was really excited about it. I was tracking this from the beginning when they were just still writing the picture. And then I saw it, and the first act was hilarious. I was like, wow, this is going to be a really good movie. And the second and third act just went downhill. And so I was really disappointed. It got the score that it deserved on Rotten Tomatoes. And I'm hoping Ted 2 will kind of, you know, bring back the fun that we saw in Ted that we missed in A Million Ways to Die in the West.
I hope so. I mean, I haven't seen A Million Ways to Die in the West because I heard it wasn't any good. Even though I'm a huge Seth MacFarlane fan, and I hope Ted 2 does well. That being said, comedy sequels are hit or miss. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
You never know what you're going to get. Okay, what was your biggest surprise?
My biggest surprise is actually my honorable mention that was Gone Girl, because like I said, I like Fincher, but I'm not like a devotee like you are, because sometimes I gotta be in the right mood to watch a Fincher film, because two things are going to happen when you watch a Fincher film. It's going to have a dark tone throughout, and it's going to have a depressing, nihilistic ending. That's just the way that he does stuff.
It's true.
And it happens with all of them. Seven, Fight Club, The Game, Gone Girl. They all have these endings where nothing's right for anybody.
Girl with a Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah.
Even Benjamin Button ends very sad. It has a nice tone throughout, but it ends very sad.
So you got to be in the mood, at least for me, to watch a Fincher film, because, like I said, no one's going to end up happy. But that being said, he does make very suspenseful, interesting films, and the strength of the cast alone had to, like, really knocked me away, because I like Ben Affleck, and I think but I always think of him more as a great, better director than he is actor. That being said, though, I think he's improved quite a bit, and really liked him in this film. Again, Rosamund Pike stole the show, and it kept me guessing throughout. I didn't even expect to see Neil Patrick Harris take a dark turn, but he certainly did.
Definition of a dark turn.
But yeah, very, very awesome film, and I would love to see it again.
Well, my biggest surprise, we don't need to talk about it a lot because we've already talked about it, and that is Captain America 2. I was floored. I was very surprised because I was expecting just another random Marvel movie.
Yeah,
or
despite me saying, because did I not, after that first midnight showing, like you and I were talking with one of our friends, Rachel, at the time, and I said, guys, this is actually a really good movie.
I can't trust you. I cannot trust you. You were so much of a Chris Evans fanboy and a Marvel fanboy. I can't take your word for it. But you were absolutely right. You were absolutely right. You've been right with Guardians of the Galaxy and Captain America 2. And so I got to give you props where props are due.
Thank you very much.
All right, so now let's do a rapid-fire session, because we've been going on quite some time. So let's give a rapid-fire session of our movies that we are looking forward to the most in 2015. How about you give me your top five in no particular order?
Yeah, well, this is going to, I imagine there's going to have some overlap, because 2015 is going to be the year of the franchise, no doubt. Mm-hmm. So from top to bottom, most anticipated, of course, Avengers Age of Ultron. Enough said. I already said my piece when we talked about the trailer. Avengers Age of Ultron, Spectre, Star Wars, Ant-Man, and surprisingly for some people, The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2.
Yeah, that was surprising for me, but the rest is spot on. Mine, my list is very, very similar. And Age of Ultron, Star Wars, Spectre, but then Chappie and Knight of Cups.
And then my honorable mention for looking forward to next year is Terminator Genesis.
Oh, that's a good one. My honorable mention of 2015 is Mr. Holmes, starring Ian McKellen as an older Sherlock Holmes.
Really? I did not know that was happening.
Yes, it's they released a photo of what he looks like, and I'm really excited. I think this is going to be pretty cool. Like, this is like way out of left field. I don't know who had this idea, but they need a pat on the head and a big bonus check for coming up with this idea, because I think this is going to be a stellar movie.
I mean, I'll see Ian McKellen in anything.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's playing Sherlock Holmes, so much the better.
All right, well, that was our best of 2014 and also the best of upcoming 2015. Thank you so much for listening. Please go to thenerdparty.com, and that way you can find out where all of our episodes are and where they're located, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Libsyn, everything that you can possibly think of. We are there. And also, please go to facebook.com/thenerdparty. Give us a like and comment on the episodes. Get a discussion going, and we'll talk back. And you can also find us on Twitter. You can find me at the Insane Robin.
And you can find me at mhanson0207. And you can find both of us on our Facebook page and our Tumblr page.
That's right. And thank you so much. And please, if you like the show, give us a 5-star review. And it helps us in the listings. It helps other people find us on iTunes. And we will give you a shout out on the podcast. And please send us an email at contact@thenerdparty if you give us a 5-star review, so that we know to give you a shout out. So thank you so much. And we'll see you next week.
Coming up next week.
There are two kinds of pain. Sort of pain that makes you strong, or useless pain. Sort of pain that's only suffering. I have no patience for useless things. Moments like this require someone who will act, who will do the unpleasant thing, the necessary thing.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
business, as in life, loyalty should never be rewarded with complacency. With a Barclays business account, the longer you stay with us, the more of your monthly bank charges we'll give you back. It's called Loyalty Reward, and it's our thank you to businesses for being a customer. We just think that's business common sense. To find out about moving your business account to Barclays, visit us in branch or go online at barclays.co.uk/businesscommonsense. Terms and conditions apply, only available on selected price plans.